better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 178 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
Maggie is off this week, so we've got a two-woman pod. The Mets, as far as the Mets go, they played two contending teams this past week in the Rangers and Mariners. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Rangers and then took 2 out of 3 from the Mariners to go 500 for the week.
Which was frustrating because the Rangers were slumping coming in and the Mariners were red hot. And of course, surging. They lose to the slumping team and then beat the surging team.
Very typical.
Typical
five,
Mets.
5 of the 6 games were decided by one run. So there was a lot of close games this week. The only game that was not decided by one run was yesterday's game, which the Mets won 6-3. The finale of the Rangers series, the Mets managed to salvage in walk-off fashion, a very exciting walk-off win. DJ Stewart was hit by a pitch.
By Aroldis Chapman.
And that was like the day that we put Dollars for Dingers, the spreadsheet, like out into the world. It was a couple of days before the start of September. But, you know, we like to get people to get their pledges in, give them a couple of days to do that before the campaign actually starts. So the day that was the day we posted the spreadsheet and like officially launched the campaign and the Mets walked off an abuser. It was just like poetic justice. It was very nice. It was good. I liked that. It was a competitive week of Mets baseball. They were competitive against two competing teams, though. Yes, like you said, Linda, the Rangers were slumping. Obviously, both these teams have playoff aspirations. And sadly, as we find ourselves in this position all too often, the Mets are at the stage where, you know, the best thing they can do is play spoiler for other teams.
I don't know. The Rangers really didn't impress me.
I think they're frauds.
I think they're frauds too.
But you know, Max Scherzer's pitching really good for them.
Of course, the end tonight it's Scherzer versus Verlander.
Yes,
because of course it is.
Verlander has not pitched well, I think.
No, he's been up and down
since being traded. I think his most recent start was pretty poor, if I'm remembering correctly. But I haven't been paying too much attention because I try not to. But the biggest story of the week in Mets land is that Ronnie Mauricio was called up from AAA, and he's already, you know, left an impression in his first 11 major league at bats. He has 5 hits, and his first major league hit was a ringing double that went off the bat at 117.3 miles an hour, the hardest hit ball a Met has hit this season. And he looked pretty good at second base to boot. So good for him. It's cool getting to see, you know, the potential future players on this team succeed.
And like, you know, he's just the latest of the baby Mets. So you have like, you know, that little youth infusion going on. And he also stole a base too. So
he stole 2 bases.
Yeah. So it's nice. You know, he's a more of a well-rounded player, I guess, than like a Beatty, because Beatty's not going to steal you many bases. So it's nice that they have all these baby Mets, but they each bring a little something different to the team.
Yeah. I still
don't know how many are true major leaguers out of all of them, but for
we'll
now,
find out.
Yeah. Now's the time.
We now have all 4 baby Mets together. Hopefully between the 4, we get at least a couple of legit major leaguers out of it. I know Alvarez has been slumping for a long time and still is, but I think he's a legit major leaguer, even if his offense never comes around to the point where he's like the prodigious like power threat. He's always going to be a power threat because he has the tool, like the power tool. Like it's undeniable. But it's just a question of if he's not seeing the ball well, he might just like strike out a lot.
And he's also just 21 years old.
Exactly.
So, I mean, he's got room to grow.
And even if it never really comes around, he's already a major leaguer from a defensive standpoint. Like, his catching is ready. Like, he is a major league catcher already right now. So I think that I'm optimistic about him. I feel like I read and hear from and talk to, obviously, all of our awesome prospect writers on the minor league side of Home Run Applesauce and Amazing Avenue. And, you know, it's like, I feel like that had colored my perception of Ronnie Mauricio, because his stock had fallen so much this year, just based on his swing decisions, the fact that he doesn't make a lot of contact in the zone. And I was like, oh my God, he's going to strike out all the time, like Mark Vientos, and is he any good? And I mean, obviously 11 at-bats doesn't really mean anything, but he already looks better than Vientos did when Vientos first got called up. But to Mark Vientos' credit, he's had a really good week this week himself. Mark Vientos looked good lately. Beatty's really the only one that hasn't looked good upon being called back up yet.
Mauricio doesn't look overwhelmed or overmatched.
Right.
But again, small sample size. But I also do wonder, you know, he's talked about it a little bit. I think Alvarez and Beatty have talked about it a little bit, that having that support system there in place already, since they all know each other, that's got to be beneficial for all of them. Who've, you know, somebody who's literally just gone what you went through, and to be there to like kind of support you and walk you through like what to expect. And so that's, you know, that's been nice to see too, because they all seem like they're close, which is also very adorable.
It is, yes, it's very heartwarming. And like, and they're clearly comfortable like playing with each other,
yes,
played together a lot. It's interesting because it creates kind of a little bit of a roster crunch having all these guys on the team at the same time, because Brett Beatty, who was recalled, obviously plays third base primarily, and that's what position Mark Vientos plays primarily. You know, Vientos can DH a little bit, but yeah, so it's interesting. You can't play them both at third base at the same time, and then you have Ronnie Mauricio playing, who came up as a shortstop, playing second base, and has been playing second base for a while, but they were even giving these guys reps in the outfield because they were like, how are we going to like roster all of them? Jeff McNeil has been playing in the outfield pretty much every day now with Mauricio playing at second base.
I think that has to be the future.
Yeah.
If
Mauricio's legit.
Sticks. Yeah. If Mauricio sticks, I think McNeil, there's more of a need in the outfield right now. And McNeil's at least shown he's proficient there. Mauricio probably, let's not go there.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe let's not test those waters. Daniel Murphy getting flashbacks of Daniel Murphy
and Lucas Duda.
Lucas Duda was a first baseman, though, that's a little different, but Daniel Murphy is a second baseman that they had tried to play the outfield that went really poorly. But Daniel Murphy was a worse fielder than Mauricio to begin with. But yeah,
so I think having Lindor next to him too
really helps.
Yeah, that's going to really help.
Yeah. And yeah, the outfield is interesting now because, you know, Starling Marte, obviously, like, Mark Canna got traded. Starling Marte remains on the injured list, and there is like really no timetable for his return. He was getting a second opinion. Like, it was just not good at all. But gotta have DJ Stewart needs to play every day at this point because of how he's hitting. So he's playing in right field, and Jeff McNeil's playing in left field with Brandon Nimmo as always in center. So that's really cut into the playing time of some of these other guys who have been filling in rather admirably when the Mets got depleted because of all the trades, like Rafael Ortega and Jonathan Araúz. Araúz hasn't hit very much, but he's played well in the field, and Ortega has impressed with his shot he's been given. But yeah, those guys are relegated back to the bench now because baby Mets are here. RIP to Danny Mendick.
Yes, step back down. But also to TJ Stewart's credit, I had no hope for him in the field, and he's shown he can play a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gary Cohen said during the broadcast, and I think he's right, the more reps he's gotten out there, the better he's looked. Like, he's gotten better with time and with consistent playing time. Because he's made a couple of blunders too, but those were mostly in the beginning. And since then, he's made up for it by making some fantastic plays.
Yeah.
That play he made during the Mariners series who hit the ball into the gap. Was it Teoscar Hernandez?
I think so. When McGill was pitching.
It was like, that ball was destined for the gap. And he made an excellent play right up against the wall. That was legit, real outfielder stuff.
There was no luck involved in that one. That was legit.
I have no idea how he got that. It was a perfect route, too.
It was, yeah. He got a great jump and, made a great play.
Yeah. The only other roster move of note, is that with September roster expansions is that Jose Buto is up.
Yeah. What the hell?
Joey Lucchese getting the major shaft. I think I don't really understand this week. They've been doing the thing where they've been giving Kodai Senga an extra day of rest, which please keep doing what you're doing with that, because now the games don't matter anymore and it's working for Senga. So keep doing it. But Joey Lucchese should be here. And I mean, God bless Denji Reyes. He gave an excellent effort. He pitched probably the best game he's pitched as a Met. This week. Cool. That's awesome.
I'm fine. Yeah. Really
happy for him. But I don't understand why Jose Buto is now here instead of Joey Lucchese.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
I'm going to say, what do they just not think they have anything in Lucchese? But every time they've called them
up, they seem to hate the man for some reason.
He's been fine. I legitimately, is there something we're not seeing that they see that they don't think he can? But this is the same team that kept running McGill and Peterson out there when they were struggling.
Right.
So for the churr.
Yeah, justice for the churr. I agree.
Unless he's legitimately hurt from when he got hit, but maybe he seemed okay.
Yeah, he got hit in the neck. For those who haven't been following, he got hit in the neck in the minors. He got hit in the neck with a line drive, but he stayed in the game.
Yeah.
So unclear. Maybe they just wanted to give him some rest, but we'll see what happens. I am surprised. I'm very surprised. I hope that he gets a shot at some point this month.
Me too.
Because he deserves it.
Me too. I think he could legit be a fine five if he just gets the chance.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Speaking of guys who might be a fifth starter or maybe not, it's been interesting. I feel like David Peterson and Tyler McGill, both in aggregate, have been poor this year and taken steps backward. But they have each within the season shown signs of promise, but never at the same time. So this week, Tyler McGill pitched really well twice. He pitched really well on Monday. Mets lost, but it wasn't because of him. He pitched great. He only gave up one run in six innings. That's the first time I've seen McGill pitch six complete innings in ever
since April.
So it was arguably his finest start this year, or at least since April.
Because he always starts well in April, and then it's downhill from there.
Yeah. So it was one of his best starts of the season. And then he also pitched yesterday and got the win. He didn't pitch he wasn't quite as dominant yesterday, but he didn't need to be because the Mets had their hit and choose on yesterday.
I mean, he was the definition of fine yesterday.
Yeah, he was fine. And so McGill stepped forward. Peterson, 4 runs in 4 innings, 7 hits, a bazillion pitches, no walks.
Which is odd.
Usually Peterson lasts 4 innings and throws a bazillion pitches because he walks the ballpark. but no walks this time. 4 strikeouts, no walks. But he got hit hard.
Yeah.
And it was honestly a miracle it wasn't worse. Because I think that, if I'm recalling correctly, I think the defense made a couple of nice plays behind Peterson, too. He was hit very hard in that start.
I mean, to be fair, the Mariners are a good team.
Yes,
but
they're good. Yes.
But still, it was bad.
So it's always like they're never good at the same time. It's like, oh, McGill looks good this week. And Peterson throws up a major stinker. And it's like, oh, Peterson, like last week, it was like, oh, Peterson, like, you know, pitched really well against the Angels. And it was like, oh, McGill pitched like crap again. It was like, can never be good at the same time.
But to Peterson's credit, I think this is his first real stinker since he's been recalled.
Yeah, he's been pretty good since he's been back. This was the first time he's been bad.
Yeah, so I don't know. He's still so hard to gauge.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, like, the Mets actually have, and we can talk about this more, like, you know, as we approach the offseason, but the Mets have a lot of arbitration eligible players, like a lot of them rostering right now. Obviously Alonso is one of them, is going to be the highest paid one, but I'm not counting him because I think he's either going to be like extended or traded. Like he's not going to get his arbitration salary probably. So he's one of them, the most prominent one, but they have so many, including David Peterson.
Aww.
And I think that he is a useful enough asset as a depth guy to tender a contract at the price that he is going to be paid. But
and he might, like we said, he could still be a fine long man out of the pen. I could see him being okay with that in that role.
Yeah. But they cannot go into the season next year with him penciled into one of those rotation slots. They can't do it.
No. That would be a major failing if they do.
But yeah, so he's arbitration eligible. So is Joey Lucchese. So is like a bunch of their like those the optionable relievers or whatever. Like Brigham is arbitration eligible. Coonrod is arbitration eligible. Lord. They have to this is not arbitration, but they have to decide whether to take Brooks Raley's option, which I think is $6 million. Which is probably kind of a no-brainer for them. I mean, I know he stunk it up this week, but overall he's been very good this year. So yeah, they have a bunch of interesting cases. Rafael Ortega and DJ Stewart, both arbitration eligible. I don't think Ortega, I was surprised because Ortega is such a veteran, but I guess he's accrued so little service time that he's arbitration eligible still. DJ Stewart arbitration eligible. I think the Mets are going to tender DJ Stewart.
Yeah, I mean at this point,
at this rate,
why not?
Drew Smith arbitration eligible. He's a borderline non-tender candidate. I mean, I think they're
especially
probably
recently.
I think they're probably going to tender him just because they can't rebuild their entire bullpen. But it's not great. No. And he's going to get paid like a surprising amount for what you think Drew Smith is, I think.
But what was his base salary this year?
Well, is he arb Drew Smith contract? Let's find out. I forget how much. Well, that's not
it's one answer. Drew Smith, Allison. How much could he cost?
Yeah, it's one Drew Smith. He was paid $1.3 million this year.
Okay.
And he's going to get a raise.
Yeah.
Over that. So that's like $2 or $3 million.
I was
going
to say somewhere in
Drew
the
$2 to $3
range. Yeah. That's
which
a lot.
I don't know about that one. But I mean, who cares about $2 or $3 million? I don't, but it's just, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, a lot of borderline cases they have going on.
Well, and this is all, you know, this is the team that Epler built, so now all those chickens are coming home to roost.
Yep.
These are the arms you wanted, Epler.
But the one success story, the arms that he brought, the biggest success story, obviously, Kodai Senga.
We need
to talk about some more, because he low-key, I think, now has a legit shot to win the NL Cy Young Award. I think that is, I'm not sure, I don't think he's the favorite. I don't think he's even in the top, like, two at this point. But, like, he's gonna get votes at this point for the NL Cy Young. Like, he has a better chance of winning the Cy Young than the Rookie of the Year, weirdly enough.
Like, everybody's talking about Blake Snell, but it feels so cheap that he only goes 5 innings every start. That to me isn't an ace. I'm sorry. If you can't go three times through the rotation, that's a problem.
Blake Snell, you mean like one of the like three pitchers the Mets can sign this offseason?
Okay, I'll change my tune in the offseason, but right now, no. You're cheapening it if you give it to Blake Snell.
Kodai Senga struck out a dozen batters in his last outing. And he's just been like this second half, Kodai Senga has been absolutely unreal. Just like unreal. So good. The Ghost Fork has been unhittable. He's been great. Watching him has been probably the biggest bright spot of this season.
He's been everything and more that they were hoping they were getting.
And the season that Lindor has had and hoping that he reaches the 30-30 season. I think those are the two like bright spots. And until recently, it was Francisco Alvarez was the third one, but he's kind of fallen off a lot. Yeah. But like the two clear bright spots of the 2023 Mets are Kodai Senga and Francisco Lindor to me. I know Pete hitting dingers is fun, and he's also been a really, really bright spot this year. But I think that's edged out by Kodai Senga because he's been just so fun to watch. And I'm excited that he's on the team.
Me too. Next
year. Yeah. And moving forward.
Well, it wasn't Pete's fault, but when he was hurt, he wasn't really hitting the amount of dingers he should have been.
Yeah, because you mean the Mets brought him back too soon? You
know, shocker. But for the most part, like in the beginning, Senga was clearly hadn't made the adjustment because the walks were there, his control was off. But now it seems he's finally put that behind him. So even when he was struggling, he never really had a complete stinker where you're like, oof. I don't think he's going to hack it in the major leagues. Like, he was always either fine or really good. So now he's just
really good.
Pulled it all together into really good slash ace territory.
He hasn't had, like, a bad start in, like, 2 months.
Yeah.
Like, he just hasn't. And he's probably going to finish, like, if he keeps going like he's going, he's going to finish the season with an ERA under 3.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
And, like, if you saw his numbers from July, they were DeGrom like.
Yeah.
Which was kind of scary.
Yeah. He's just been, in the second half, he's been an ace. He's been the ace.
Yes.
And he's been, I mean, now that obviously Scherzer and Verlander have been traded, and I mean, arguably, like, even if they weren't, like, he's the ace of the staff.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of seized that title even when they were there because he was more consistent.
Yep.
And the Ghost Fork is literally the most unhittable pitch in the league.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is insane.
To the point where, oh my goodness, why am I blanking on Logan Gilbert said that he was trying to emulate that pitch.
Yes, yes.
And he succeeded at doing so. The first time he saw the pitch last year, he said, I need to learn to do that. And so he's been throwing a similar pitch and having success with it. So when you have a pitch that's good enough that other pitchers who are pitching like in Major League Baseball at a very high level are emulating it, yeah, then you're probably pretty good.
Yeah. Like, again, I mean, not to keep making the comparisons, but that's what people kept saying about Jake, too. Like, I need to figure out how he throws his fastball. It's always so weird when the Mets have a player like that. Like, I'm so used to other teams having that star that everybody looks up to, but I still find it strange when the Mets have somebody that makes not only, like, fans take notice, but other players around the league, too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's just very, it's like an event watching him pitch.
Yeah.
It's very fun. It's something that, you know, it was like a Jake-shaped hole that's been left. Not to say that Senga is really anything like DeGrom in, like, the way he pitches, like, his personality. Like, they're nothing alike.
No.
but what was missing was, like, the event that every fifth start is when that guy is on the mound, and Kodai Senga sort of become that.
Yeah, where you tune in specifically for that.
To watch
him
pitch. Exactly.
Or you go to that day's game.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
Although I do feel kind of bad because if it weren't for Ohtani, I wonder if he would be generating more buzz. He's kind of overshadowed by Ohtani.
Ohtani, come to the Mets so that you can be, they can be a power duo together.
Yeah. Then neither of you overshadow each other. You enhance each other.
Exactly.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. That's what I hear when I make another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform that allows you to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. So sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase, and take your business to the next level today.
This week on Get Hench,
we're talking to top athletes about how they remain at the top.
Hey, Sergey, wait up! Sergey!
Carl, why are you here?
I saw you run out of the house. What are you doing?
I'm running.
Yeah, but what are you running from? The cops.
No, I'm running and listening to our podcast.
You're going to need a better alibi than that, bro. Hey? I'll get your passport, and I know a guy who can get us a car. After that, we're on our own.
No, I just want to listen to my podcast.
Don't wombat it, meerkat it.
Simples.
So we talked about Snell being one of the like three legit good pitchers that are available this offseason. Well, there's another one who we now have to talk about in a negative light. Julio Urías, hours before we started recording this on Monday night, was arrested on suspicion of felony domestic violence. And this is his second offense. He's done this before.
And he might have been involved in the cover-up of the sexual assault. And when was that? It involved, like, Dodgers prospects.
Yeah, when Gabe Kapler was still with the Dodgers, yes.
Yeah, so there was rumor. I mean, nothing was ever proven, but there was always the hint that he might have not done it, but somehow been involved.
Yes. So Major League Baseball is, you know, it's very similar to how these things always go. We don't know much about it yet, and we won't until Major League Baseball conducts its investigation. And as we know, from previous, instances, that can take a long time. With Bauer, it took a very long time. Obviously, part of that was Bauer's doing because he kept like suing everybody. But yeah, these investigations can be quick or they can be very long. We won't know. But yeah, Urías has been arrested before for domestic violence. In 2019, he was arrested and he received he was never charged, but he received a 20-game suspension for that. And he was on administrative leave while the league was investigating that charge back in 2019. So now this dude is a repeat offender.
Yeah.
I mean, out of baseball.
It one should have been enough. But again, I know it's always hard because then you're putting the victim in an even tougher situation because now they're home and angry. So I know there's a hard balance. You can't just say one strike and they're out, but it really is sickening that this just keeps happening over and over. And it doesn't seem like baseball's taking it seriously because what policies have changed since Ozuna even and Chapman?
And it's like I know it's like a cliche, but it's a phrase for a reason. When people tell you who they are, listen.
Yeah.
Like, this dude has already shown us who he is. And like these dudes who do this often do it again. And we talked about this with Bauer. We talked about this with Bauer about how his type of behavior that he was demonstrating while, you know, before he was before all the really awful, terrible shit came out about him, the type of behavior he was demonstrating was indicative of the type of person that does this and mm-hmm. does it repeatedly.
And also, although he's changed, all the people come up to bat, he had overcome adversity, he's really sorry. This is why you don't immediately make those assumptions until they prove that they are true. Like, they go to therapy, they go get help. If they make a concerted effort to change, fine. Then yes, I'll believe it. But has any of these people ever displayed any kind of remorse like that? Well, before the coaches, the organization, players, teammates all jump to their defense and say, no, he's a really good guy. He's my friend. He would never do that. But you don't know how, because he's your friend, you don't know what goes on at home.
Yeah. I just wish that baseball would take this more seriously the first time, because that's how it happens again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened again. And, you know, you can't give this guy another chance. You can't do it. He has to be gone. And, you know, only like, obviously this is so secondary to everything else, but you have to be like an unrepentant idiot to act this way when you're a pending free agent. Like,
and also,
are you kidding me? You literally just ruined your career.
Yeah. Just like Trevor Bauer. But you know what? That's what they deserve. And also,
it is what they deserve.
He's 27 years old. He's still young. To do this twice when you're only 27 years old? I don't know. There's no maturity. There was no growing up. There was no lessons from the first time. He demonstrated that he learned nothing. And the punishment meant nothing. So clearly your punishment isn't working.
Yeah. And like, we talk a lot on the show about the culture and the toxic masculinity that's rampant in sports that enables this sort of thing to go unchecked. And all of that is true. But I think what's also true is that these men are rich at a very young age.
Yeah.
At a very young age, they often have life-changing money. And that plays a part in this as well. They have gone basically their entire young, adolescent and young adult lives, never being told no by anyone because they're the best at a sport. And so they get treated like kings.
Yeah, I think that
can go wrong.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it. So then when somebody finally does tell them no, they don't know how to handle it.
Nope.
So there does need to be a better support system for their kids. They're literally kids when they get signed. So there definitely has to be something in place to help these kids.
Yeah. And not the predatory systems that they have in Latin America, where these like shady guys get some portion of whatever team-friendly extension they're signed to.
Yeah.
Not that type of support system.
That's not what we're talking about. I know. It's just, we laugh, but it's because it's so sad. Like,
yeah, it really is.
The whole system's just broken. And there's really nobody really looking to fix it either.
And you know, on a similar note, like, sucks that we have to keep talking about this, but there's been, you know, developments in the Wander Franco situation as well. We sort of talked about this a little bit last week on the show, but last week on the show, it was sort of just at the rumor stage, like reporters were tweeting out that this might be true. But now we have it in like official reported form. That the Dominican Republic is investigating a second complaint against Wander Franco. So a special prosecutor in the Dominican Republic is investigating a second formal complaint against Franco that he engaged in a relationship with a minor. So there's three total accusations at this point from three different people. Two of them are formal complaints that the special prosecutor is investigating. And the third one is just, you know, kind of like a person who has come out and said, or like social media, whatever. So the first complaint was filed on July 17th. And another, so at that point, a girl had alleged to alleged that she had a relationship with Franco when she was a minor. And the third girl hasn't spoken to authorities. So two people have spoken to authorities. And there's a third person that hasn't. So this is like
really bad.
Really, really bad. Like
he has all the marks of a serial predator. Yeah. Allegedly. I mean, not to, you know, confirm it, but it definitely seems like that.
Yeah. Like the type of thing where, like, when there's more than one accusation like this, if there's any truth to these accusations, he is done in baseball. And like that, I mean, you know, obviously we talk on this podcast all the time about how little faith we have in baseball to handle this sort of thing appropriately. This is the type of thing that I feel 100% confident that if substantial evidence is found to back up these accusations, he will be done in baseball. He will not come back.
This is the one thing you can't sweep up under the rug.
Yeah.
There. It's just, it's too horrific to just say, but his talent overcomes it. No, 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 no.
Yeah. The only precedent we really have for this is Felipe Vasquez.
Yeah.
And he went to, I mean, he went to jail. And obviously, if this is true, then Wander Franco's going to go to jail too.
He went to jail in the Dominican Republic, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And he never came back to baseball after that. And yeah, so if this is true, Wander Franco's also going to jail.
Yeah.
This is not just being suspended from baseball. This is jail.
This is serious crimes that he has committed.
Yeah, that man is probably going to jail. And like people have talked about like, oh, this is in the Dominican Republic and blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you, the age of consent in the Dominican Republic is still 18 years old.
Yeah.
So he can go to jail for this, regardless of whether these events occurred in the Dominican Republic or in the United States.
And are you really that gross to defend a relationship with a 14-year-old?
There, you'd be surprised how many people do it.
It doesn't matter. Like, let's say the Dominican Republic had different, you know, laws saying the age of consent was lower. It's still a child.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's, and also, again, we've talked about this on the show a lot. Just because someone doesn't go to jail, isn't charged criminally, isn't found guilty of a crime, does not mean they don't deserve to be suspended for what they've done.
Yeah, it's a privilege to play Major League Baseball. You have no right to it.
The bar is different here. You can't send someone to jail without evidence, without substantial evidence that they've committed a crime. But you can... MLB can do whatever it wants, it based on the findings of its investigation.
Yeah, because
as a private entity, it is not subject to, you know, what
the same legal standards.
Yeah, what the court thinks, what a jury thinks.
Well, it was just like if I showed drunk to my job, they'd be like, "Okay, you're fired." Doesn't mean I'm going to jail,
right?
So if you screw up at your job, or if your job has reason to get rid of you, you can get rid of easily without ever going to jail. And also, now I also view Jose Siri in a negative light.
He was out here being like, oh, just rumors. They're trying to get money.
Immediately.
In the background of his Instagram live video. Yeah.
So Jose Siri, you're an asshole. Yeah. I'm saying that loud and proud. You are an asshole.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I have to believe he didn't know about all these other complaints at the time.
Keep your fucking mouth shut, asshole.
But, yeah. Like, it's your buddy, so you're just going to get on Instagram Live and, like, blindly defend him. Then look at what you come out looking like in the end.
Yep.
Yeah, we're not going to forget about that part.
No. Nobody
stood behind him as he, like, did an Instagram Live about how everyone's a gold digger.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, nope. that won't be quickly forgotten about.
Nope, you're not living that down, buddy. Sorry.
Both of these stories are going to take a while to fully play out, especially in Franco's case, now that there's a criminal investigation in the Dominican Republic occurring. The league often waits until after criminal investigations are concluded to discipline players under the policy. So in the case where there's, you know, sometimes, you know, a guy isn't charged, in which case the league can proceed how it sees fit at that point, whether to suspend the player or not, like they did with Urias the last time. They gave him a 20-game suspension, even though he was never charged with anything. But when there are charges and when there are criminal investigations, those play out first, and then the league acts. So this is going to be a long time that we have to wait to find out what's going to happen here. Well beyond the end of the season, probably. So,
did we ever get an update on Jimmy Cordero either?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I don't think so.
Because he was never formally suspended, I don't think.
No.
Or was he?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. But I remember them, no, they acted quickly, and we were saying it must be something really bad for them to immediately act. But I don't remember if we ever got an update or not. Yeah, he was suspended for the rest of the season, but I don't think we ever...
Yeah.
So yeah, that's still out there too.
Yeah.
Like, is it worth something being suspended next season for too? We don't know.
We never found out exactly what he did. We just know that it was bad. He was suspended for the rest of the season under the joint policy.
And he never appealed.
Yeah, and he never appealed. We know he probably violated the policy, but we don't know what he did. We know nothing about what he did.
It was back in July, but yeah, there's been no updates since then.
And he, like, deleted all his social media and stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, there's been a lot this year.
Yeah. Yeah, we still don't know anything about what happened to him. I can't find anything online either.
No.
So we're gonna shift gears from talking about, you know, bad baseball men doing horrible crimes to just slightly less bad baseball men doing crimes against, like, the integrity of baseball. So we're going to do another I took the form of a 45-year-old white man for a reason. I can only fail up segment. This week's segment is dedicated to repeat offender in this regard, Arde Moreno,
and
the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Ahead of the August 31st deadline for postseason eligibility, the Angels placed the following players on waivers. Lucas Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez, Randall Grichuk, Hunter Renfro, and Matt Moore. That's like a third of their roster. They just placed on waivers. This was purely a cost-cutting move. They were trying to cut these players' salaries loose, hoping other teams would pick up their salary, their remaining salary, so that they could get under the luxury tax.
And these were dudes they literally just acquired.
Yep. Yep.
I'm sorry. That's just bad for the game. And the fact that the league just allowed it to happen, I'm sorry. You can't, like, that's when in fantasy football, you know you're out of it, so you dump your players so that way your buddy can get them.
How does their GM not just rage quit?
Yeah.
These are dudes he just traded for.
Yeah.
He just made these trades. And now ownership is like, nope, you have to nix these trades now. You have to get rid of these guys that you just got.
And you really think Shohei wants to
and
stay
he has to
here
go, yes, boss.
Yep.
Whatever you say, boss.
Hey, Shohei, remember when we dumped half the team to save money? You want to stay here, right?
And remember when we talked to the media about how you refused an MRI? You want to stay here, right? We don't have any players left.
It's just you and Trout. You guys can make up a whole team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Shohei's out the door.
Yeah. So, obviously, no actual rules were broken here. Now that August trades are no longer a thing,
yeah,
this is what happens. And the Angels are not the only team that did this, to be clear. The Mets even did this. They put Carlos Carrasco on waivers. We didn't talk about that, but they did do that. Now, it's different what the Mets did because Carlos Carrasco was very unlikely to be claimed, and he wasn't. He hasn't been. He's still on the Mets. The Yankees did this with Bader. A bunch of teams did this. There were a few, but nobody did it as much as the Angels did.
And a lot of them were struggling players.
With players who are as good as the players that the Angels did it for.
Yeah.
So they were operating within the rules, but clearly the rules aren't working when the integrity of the game is sacrificed this way. They have to figure out, they have to bring back August trades.
Yeah,
or figure
I don't
out something.
Understand why they got rid of that to begin with.
I don't know either, but they, like, Arte Moreno should not be allowed to get away with this, quite simply. Like, the other owners should absolutely riot over this, because this is some of the most...
But they don't care.
No, they don't,
they're saving our Moreno money.
This is some of the worst, most craven, cheap bullshit I have ever seen.
But like, it's Steve Cohen who's the problem.
Exactly, right? We're made to believe that Steve Cohen is the problem, but, you know, the Angels are out here putting Lucas Giolito on waivers to save money.
Although, to be fair, he was very bad
today. Yeah, well.
So, Giolito, you're not really helping our point here. But
yeah, come on, man. But the funniest part of this whole thing is that they failed because Randall Grichuk went unclaimed and they're over the luxury tax still by like exactly Randall Grichuk's salary.
No, but then they put somebody on the IL so they don't have to pay him. So now they're back under.
Oh my God.
It was somebody who's been out. Let me see.
Oh,
if I
they
find
did
it.
Not. Those assholes. God, I hate them so much.
Let me see if I can find it. I forget who it was. Stassi, Max Stassi.
Oh, Max Stassi. Oh,
that's
what I thought. They couldn't get any more craven. They did. Yep.
The Angels have kept Stassi on the IL throughout the season as he dealt with a meth family issue, which was the right thing to do. But by not paying him for the final month, they'll get below the tax.
Oh my God. Those cheap sons of bitches. I hate them all.
Mm-hmm.
I hate them so much.
I was going to say, I wish they had still gone over.
Max Stassi should file a grievance is what he should do.
You do it, Stassi. We believe
Stassi,
in you.
Please file a grievance.
You can do this, Max Stassi.
I'm pretty sure he would win.
He would, right?
Like
they're not paying him.
They're literally withholding his money.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's wild. Anyway, we will link this in the show notes and tweets and such, but there was a really good piece from Patrick Dubuque at Baseball Prospectus about this whole thing, and very similar to what we were just talking about how like it's when the rules are ruining everything, you have to change them, and this is really bad for the integrity of the game, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I don't know why they got rid of the August trades, but this is kind of the end result of that, the downstream result of that.
But
like,
these guys
are always going to find ways around whatever it is that you're doing.
And it kind of blows my mind, the whole, like, at least baseball Twitter was blowing up about it, about how awful this was for the game. And yet nobody reached out to Manfred for a quote or a statement.
Yeah. And I mean, the worst part is that, like, I don't think the players union cares about this because they're still getting paid.
And like, you have a chance now to go from a bad team to a good team.
A good team.
So if anything, they're probably worried. But that's not the point, players.
Yeah. And for the good team acquiring the player, they're essentially for free. I know that they have to pick up the remaining salary, but it's free compared to like what you would be paying the player if you had signed him in free agency.
Yeah, what are you paying them? A couple mil with that?
Right. So this is just, it's so gross. It's so gross. Like the Angels look really stupid here.
But they don't care.
No, they don't care.
Or else they wouldn't do it.
Like, I was having a conversation with, I can't remember who. It was either in, like, among Mets Twitter people or among, like, Amazing Avenue people. But about, you know, because someone said their GM should just quit. Like, this is...
Yeah, like, rage quit.
It's kind of, like, undermining his work. And I was like, on one hand, yes, like... But these people have no shame at all. Like, they live for this shit. Like, this is the process shit they live for.
Yeah. Like look what we managed to do.
Look what we did. They're going to win that championship belt that they hand out for, like...
Being cheap.
For being cheap. The team that saves the most at the arbitration hearings or whatever it is. Oh, my God. It's so nauseating.
Really is. It's just also like it makes me like feel like I need to go take a shower. It's just awful. Like, this is how you're treating human beings. Like, I'm not gonna pay you what you're worth. No, I'm gonna go celebrate with some brandy and a cigarette or a cigar.
It's just the most out of touch with reality.
Yeah.
Stuff imaginable.
Let's all hate on Steve Cohen some more because he paid players.
Yeah. Oh, the Mets are bad, and so, Steve Cohen failed. The spending money doesn't work.
That's not the point. The point is to at least try, and he tried.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I can't say what I want to say about Art Moreno without, like, this podcast being potentially taken off platforms. I'm just going to not say it, and I'm going to abide by the terms and conditions of various sites. I think y'all know what I mean.
Yeah.
When I say that when the revolution comes, he's first in line. That's all I'll say.
And wasn't he one of the ones who voted against Cohen too?
Probably.
I think it was him.
Like, I know that we've been talking about John Angelos a lot lately, and he deserves every bit of people shitting all over him and making fun of him because the things he says are stupid. Like, I'm thinking about macro. Like, the gobbledygook that comes out of his mouth is unbelievable, and the fact that he's allowed to talk to the media ever is shocking to me. But this is worse than that. Because this is like the deeds are worse than the words sometimes. Like, yes, John Angelos is an idiot, but like, and I'm not saying he's never done anything bad either. I mean, gestures widely at the Orioles continuing to not spend money despite the fact that their team is really good now and they should be spending money.
And suspending their commentator too, their broadcaster.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is like, this is more craven than that. This is like really just the worst, like, petty stuff you can imagine.
And this has more far-reaching consequences, too. This directly impacts the game.
Yeah. They've got to change the rule back. They've got to bring back the August trades, because this can't be allowed to happen. Because a team will, like, a team or two will do this every year now.
Yep. Because they got away with it. So they'll absolutely continue to do it until somebody tells them no.
Because of Max Stassi, it worked.
Oh, Max Stassi. I feel bad because apparently it is a family medical issue. So
I'm going to title this episode Justice for the Churv and also Max Stassi.
Yes, yes. We're in your corner, guys. We're rooting for you.
Justice for the Churv and Max Stassi.
And Max Stassi.
But yeah, before we end the show and move on to walk-off wins, I obviously want to, and apologies in advance that we're going to be annoying about this all month, but we are going to be annoying about this.
Yep.
It's Dollars for Dingers. Y'all know. If you listen to this show, you already know about it. But it is actively happening. And just because it's already September doesn't mean it's too late for you to pledge. You can pledge anytime during the month. And the wonderful magic of Google Sheets will back calculate your pledge for the entire month. So you can submit your pledge on September 29th. We don't care. Pledging is open. The spreadsheet link is on our pinned tweet and all our other socials and on the Home Run Applesauce website. So you can go any of those places, and put your pledge in. And please put your pledge in. Obviously it gestures wildly at this episode. It matters more than ever. We can talk all we want about how frustrating it is that we have repeat offenders, repeat abusers in baseball. We can step up and do something about it by supporting victims and supporting the National Domestic Violence Hotline. So that is what we are doing, as we do every year. So please make a pledge if you haven't already. We've already raised, the campaign's only been active for like two games, and we've already raised over $1,000, like $1,200. So thank you all to every single person who's already pledged. We deeply appreciate it. And we hope to see you all on September 30th at EBS. We have so many fun prizes lined up for you guys. 4 p.m. Be there.
And thank you to the one person who pledged if somebody gets hit in the beans.
Yeah, whoever said...
I could not stop laughing.
Whoever said somebody getting hit in the beans, thank you. That gave me a nice hearty chuckle. I'm excited to track that. That should be great.
And we already got some weird ones. Lenore hit it off the foul pole. That actually was a pledge. That was awesome.
Shout out to Steve for making that pledge about the foul pole, because it happened. He made the same pledge last year and it didn't happen last year, but this year it did already on like day three.
Yeah, which is awesome. And the baby Mets. We need the baby Mets to have a big
one. Oh my goodness. So many.
And DJ Stewart.
DJ Stewart and the baby Mets are going to be the Dollars for Dingers heroes, because so many people have extras extra for those guys.
And Mauricio. Well, I think Mauricio on his own too.
On his own, yeah.
Yeah.
Is also a thing. And yeah, oh my God. DJ Stewart. The most popular, I think, single player.
Because it was Vogelbach last year.
It was.
There
it
always
was.
Seems to be that one that the fan base latches on to.
Yeah, the cult Dollars for Dingers hero this year, it's definitely DJ Stewart.
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely DJ Stewart.
And he already came through.
He did.
Day one, he came through.
It's true.
Thank you, DJ Stewart.
All right. We will end the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. This was a good transition to your walk-off win, Linda.
My walk-off win is Dollars for Diggers. It is every year, we've talked about how we really look forward to it, but it's also just, I don't dread watching Met games anymore. I was watching the game the other day, where, Ottavino blew it. Sorry, Otto. But they hit four home runs that day. So even in a Mets loss, I wasn't as annoyed as I normally would be. So it gives me something. It makes bad Mets baseball even fun. But then just to see all the pledges, all the people, retweeting, all the people who have reached out, it can, you do kind of get bogged down in the grossness of it all, like how we keep having to talk about this and it keeps happening, and but then just to see the other side of it, the good that can also come out of it in the baseball community, that's always, it's always really nice to see. And thank you to everybody who's supporting not only us, but the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Like we said, they provide such vital, needed resources to victims. So images, especially this year, since the Mets are so bad, It is that little extra boost you need to get you through the last month of the season, which has been a really bad long season. But now you have your cult heroes that you can root for and all the other weird stuff to like watch for every game. You had the person that every time a Luke hits a home run, we get to like watch out for that. And
that's also Steve.
Yes.
The foul pole and the Luke, same guy.
Same guy. Oh, and the Beans.
Beans is a different guy.
Yes, Beans is a different guy. I think Dan Reilly. Is it Dan Reilly with the Beans?
I think so.
Just little things like that now to watch for every game. And not what if Kellyanne was one, but there was another person who pledged extras for old friends, which really warmed my heart. I was like, it wasn't even
There's
me.
Like three or four of those people.
Yeah, it wasn't even me with JD this time. So that really warmed my heart, too. And I just love how creative everybody's been getting. Like, that kind of took on a life of its own. It's been really, really nice to see so far. And like we said, there's still time. There's literally no time limit on this until the season ends, because the magic of Excel allows that to happen. And Allison diligently tracking everything.
I'm tracking, in addition to just the dingers, obviously, I am tracking 66 unique different things that aside from the Mets dingers, I'm tracking 66 other things, whether that be specific player homers, Steve Gelb's interviewing us, which there's a lot of money riding on that.
There is, yes.
At Steve Gelb.
That took on a life of its own, because there's multiples of that now.
Yeah, there's like hundreds of dollars. I'm not exaggerating riding on that.
Yeah.
So normally I would not be annoying about that, and I would just let Michael continue to harass Steve Gelb's on Twitter. But now that there's hundreds of dollars for the domestic violence hotline riding on that, I'm kind of just like, eh. A lot of money riding on Edwin Diaz returning this season and striking out guys and getting saves.
A lot of money riding on if Alvarez breaks Bench's record.
Breaks Bench's under 21 home run, catcher home run record. Yes, a lot of money riding on that.
Well, a lot of Pete reaches 50 or is the leader at the end of the home run leader at the end of the season.
Alonso, a lot of money riding on Alonso Dinger specifically as well. And just like a lot of like weird, like we mentioned, a lot of weird ones, home runs by major league players named Luke. So Luke Raley, I'm talking to you, Luke Raley.
You're a man here, Luke.
You're by far the Luke leader in home runs this year. So I'm talking to you.
I put in Grandpa Buck, because seeing Grandpa Buck with Colleen always makes me so happy.
Yes.
I need more Grandpa Buck. I need more Grandpa Buck content.
So many different types of things. So thank you to everyone who pledged and for your fun, unique extras. I love tracking them. It's actually like, watching September Mets games is fun as heck, because I get to just like sit there with my computer open with the spreadsheet and update it live, like literally for every single thing that happens. It's awesome.
And watching the dollar total go up, I'm like, oh yeah, that's another one.
It's very cool. Yes. Yes. So I definitely share in that walk-off win, obviously. I do have a different walk-off win, though, this week, which actually happened this morning. We did a wisdom panel, the DNA test for Blue, our dog, and we found out that she has siblings, which we didn't know. Apparently, there were like a whole litter that were available at the rescue that we got Blue from, but they usually, when they have litters, they name them all with the same like first letter, so that you kind of know they're a litter, and they'll list their litter mates like on their little adoption page. And she didn't have any litter mates listed on her adoption page, and she wasn't like associated with any of the other dogs, so we thought she was kind of a solo pup. But as it turns out, she was not. She had a litter, and one of them also did wisdom panel, so we found out that they were siblings, and they reached out to us and said, hey, our dogs are siblings and we live in the area, do you want to have a play date with the siblings? And I was like, oh my god, yes. So we got together today, Blue and Hank, who's Blue's brother, And they look exactly alike, which is, it's so cute. Hank is just like blue, but a black dog, like literally an exact carbon copy, just a black dog. And they loved each other instantly. Like when I say that we saw them walking toward us and Blue started pulling on the leash, like lunging to get to him. Aww. Like I think she remembered him.
Maybe you can just smell. So the smells cute. Are probably strong.
Yeah, it was so cute. And they played so well together and they love each other. It was so cute. It was
Do you know why they named him Hank?
I don't know why they named him Hank. Okay. So at first I thought that they kept the name from the shelter because Blue's name was Heart, which is the dumbest name. That's why I changed it. Blue's name was Heart. And so I was like, oh, maybe they were in the same litter and they were H puppies and they were all named H names. But no. His name was Flipper.
Oh.
So I think that either they didn't know they were the same litter or they just like decided not to use the same letter for that litter for whatever reason. But apparently there are other siblings and one of them, when it was still at the shelter, was named Feather. So clearly they knew Flipper and Feather were siblings. But maybe they just didn't know that our dog was also part of this litter because maybe the rest of them are all black dogs and she's the only one who's not
black. I was going to ask, maybe the others all had similar markings.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh no, was she the white sheep of the family instead of the black sheep?
Exactly.
Poor Blue.
Yeah, but like if you put them next to each other, like they are spitting images of each other. They have the exact same face, the exact same ears, the exact same body. It's just that Blue is like yellow lab colored and Hank is black lab colored. But it was just very wholesome to reunite the brother and sister and see them play. And they had such a good time and it made me happy. And then Blue slept all day afterwards, which was also great because she's a handful. And so anything that gets her to conk out for a few hours is great by me. So that does it for the show this week. You can go to homerunapplesauce.com to check out all of our fantastic pods. You can go there to sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. If you're a patron before the September 30th event, you will get free raffle tickets. We've yet to determine the amount, but you will get a certain amount of free raffle tickets. So if you ever needed a reason to sign up for our Patreon, that is certainly it. You can sign up by going to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce. You can find all of our fantastic our whole network of pods right there. You can rate and review the show, which really helps people find it. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can follow this show on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and Blue Sky at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter and Blue Sky. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Sarvage.
And Maggie is at Maggie162. You can, am I out of things that you can do? Yeah, I am.
I think so.
Follow all of us on all the things. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, Justice for the Churv and Max Stassi. Yes. And there's no crying in hockey.